This is Mae Warren. It's the 14th of May, 1997. I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Charles Murray. But no one ever calls you Charles Murray.
They call me Murph.
Why? I want to know how Charles Murray became Murph.
Years ago, when Bob McKinnon was here, Bill McKinnon's younger brother, coaching basketball and lacrosse, he just started calling me that, and he's stuck with me ever since.
And when would that have been?
1960.
So when you were hired, you were not Murph?
No, I wasn't.
How did you come to be hired at Washington?
Well, a lot of people got to complain about the students and their parties and all kinds of noise, and the school decided to have a proctor, so Dean Gillum was dean of students at the time, and he did not. He said, I am too old to run around here at night, so let's hire somebody else. And so, 1959, he hired me.
It was 1959?
Mm-hmm.
And what was Dean Gillum like? What had he done before, and how did you take over from him?
I didn't take over from him. He was still dean of students, but I worked under him, and he was one wonderful man.
Tell me about it.
He was the type of man that you couldn't say no to. And he used to have these big flower garden shows up his house where he lived on the top of the hill over here. And at that time, I was a police officer. And he'd always call me and want to know if I wanted to handle his parking and stuff for him, so I didn't. So when this job came up, I applied for it, and he highly recommended me, and so did Dr. Griffith, who was in charge of the committee to try to find someone.
So you had been with the Lexington Police Department?
Yes.
Oh, so you'd been on the other side while she was students.
So in January 1959, I went to work, and of all time, that's the time that they held finished address. In January, they'd go home for Christmas, come back and take their exams, and then have finished address. And sometimes it'd be a foot and a half of snow on the ground.
And what did that mean in terms of fancy dress?
Well, they went on and had it, but I had to get around the best way I could.
So what would you be doing during fancy dress?
Well, I'd stay outside over there and try to keep things quiet. And after the dance was over, then I'd patrol around and turn to houses to see if everything was quiet. At that time, the school had some nice tight rules. Girls were not allowed in the dormitory, and they had rules that on big weekends, the girls could stay in the fraternity houses till 2 o'clock at night, and then a big night they could stay in until 3 o'clock, but any other times on normal weekend they had to be out of the house by 1 o'clock, and that was my job to see that it was done.
And how'd you do that?
I just got them from the tent houses and look around, this, that, and the other, and see what's going on. If I thought some girls in the house, I would go in and get rid of them.
How'd you do that?
Just walked in the house and told them they'd leave.
Ever any problems?
I never had too much problems with them. The whole time I worked here, the 30-some years I worked here, I never had any problem with the students at all. I got along with them well.
Well, it sure seems to me, from what I hear on the other side, that you got along with them well.
I did real well. And instead of trying to hinder them, I tried to help them. And I tried to prevent trouble before it got started.
Well, that's what I've heard, and that's what I'd really like to hear your side of the story. Because one of the things that people who talk about you, what they say is, he was always there. And they thought you were God. They thought you were omnipresent. How did you know where to be?
I don't know. Just luck, I guess. From police experience, I imagine. I just always happened to show up, either before it happened or right as soon as it got ready to happen.
So what would you do if you saw something about to happen?
That I'd be told they'd have to knock it off and get back in the fraternity house and be quiet.
But there must have been more to it than that.
Well, I don't know. I just was just lucky. Just like I said, I tried to help them any way I could instead of hindering them. As long as they listened to me and did what I told them, then there wasn't any problem. And they generally did what I told them.
But this is a pretty big campus.
And I was by myself at the time.
That's what my next question was. How long were you by yourself?
There was one night watchman at that time. And in the summertime, when he took off, I had to come over here at night and do what he did.
So you were here day and night?
Yeah. I put it in any time as many hours as 18, 19 hours a day. And on weekends, I leave the house on Saturday night, especially. I leave the house on about 9 o'clock at night, and sometimes it's 4:30 or 5 before I came home. After being up all day fooling football games and stuff like that.
How did you do that?
I don't know. I just did it. And I stayed in pretty good shape there. And I played handball 5 days a week when I had a chance. And I just stayed in pretty good shape.
Well, I can tell you that you are a much beloved personality on this campus through many generations. Yeah. And I've had more than one person tell me that you saved him from doing something that he would have really regretted doing.
I did. I used to keep him out of trouble. And I had gone to jail and got him out of jail when he get locked up for something.
Well, I'm not asking for names, I'm asking for stories. Can you tell me about something like that? Something that happened that would have caused?
To go to jail?
Yeah.
Well, one night, the boy, he was a football player. He broke an antenna off our car, and it turned out to be a FBI car. And I happened to know the man. And so I went to the doctor and I said, if I get it replaced or fixed like it should be, would you charge him with anything? And he said, no, just take care of it. And I did.
What was an FBI car doing here?
I don't know. Just they always around. I remember one night years ago, back in the early 60s, when over in Rome, we had an old railroad station, which Washington Young is now. He used to run the Greyhound bus over there. And I happened to be up, it must have been about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was getting dressed because I heard them, I could hear them all the way up to my house. But that time the telephone rang with Dean Gillen. He said, will you go over and take care of that? He says, I'm too old to be going over there. I said, I'm on my way now, Dean. I said, I hear him from here. So instead of pulling up in the front where they could see me, I parked my car in behind the over near the railroad station over on the other side, and guy went through the back door. And there was a black boy on this bus, and the students were rocking the bus. And his eyes had gotten real big. I didn't think he was after him. And so I just reached over in the glove compartment of my car and got a pencil and a piece of paper. Walked in the crowd and stood there looking around like I was writing names down, which I wasn't. For about 5 minutes, I was standing there by myself. And I didn't write a name. So they all come back up on the hill.
Yeah, I've heard subtlety is your trade.
There's several other times. One night, when certain return to Irish was having, had a bunch of girls up there, which was James Madison, Woman's College at the time. Oh, I think that's what they call it. And they had had a sorority up here. And one of the football players there in the front yard, he was in behind some bushes, and I come down the street and I saw all these young ladies going up there and toward the turn guys. And I just told us, hollering, I said, "You can't do that, young ladies. You got to get out of here." One of the guys up there behind the bush of hollers said, "That damn guy ever go to bed." And I tell you, there's some right good stories. And in one time, I think you know this one, but 12 o'clock at night, I was messing around, and that's when they had a lot more bushes over here in the freshman dorms than we have now. A bunch of upperclassmen there trying to get these kids to go to Southern Seminary for a panty raising. So I just didn't say a word, just got in my car and drove to the University and learned to scare to where they were coming. And about 300 of them come up over that hill down below. They parked all down there. And as he come up over the hill, I stepped out underneath the street light where they could see me. Now, I knew this one boy, Lee. He looked up and he saw me and said, "Where the hell did you come from?" I said, "The best thing you can do is get back home." So they did.
Now, what year was that again?
It was in the 60s.
They were still doing panty raids in the 60s. How long did that kind of thing go on?
We only had one try at it. It didn't go on too much.
Well, I bet the people that thought they said were grateful for you.
Well, they were waiting on, and this one boy, because he was a policeman over there, I knew real well. He said, "Bob, I'm going around behind the dormitory to see if any of them got around there." He went around there, and where these girls were looking at the windows, and one of them hollered, the one says, "Take that uniform off and come on in here." Oh boy, I tell you, I had some times. And I was trying to think of another story this morning. Can't quite think of anything now. Maybe it'll come back to me a little later. But can't quite think of it. I had so many of them. I can't think of it right now.
Oh, it'll come to me. Well, you were here at an interesting time. Now, did you grow up in Lexington?
I was born here in Lexington. My mother passed away when I was 10 years old. My father went back to Lynchburg, where he came from, and I finished high school over there. Then I got to go to high school. The Second World War came along, and I ended up in the Marine Corps.
And then you came back to Lexington?
In 1946.
Uh-huh.
I got out of the service. My grandmother was still living, so I came back here and stayed with her. I got married in 1945.
So you've known Washington and Lee pretty much all your life?
All my life, yes.
But when you came in 1959, things were still probably pretty much as you'd known them.
Yeah,
but things were starting to change.
Yeah, every time I saw a bunch of students standing in front of a turn house toward the street, I'd say, "You'd have to go back inside with that alcohol, because the school was always known to drink, and they're going to keep on drinking." That's wrong. I'm just trying to think of that was something else. It won't come to me. Oh,
I'm sure it'll come back as we keep talking.
Maybe it will.
So you came to work here in 1959.
January 1959.
But you had been a student. I mean, a policeman in Lexington.
Yes.
One of the things that I've seen pictures of, but I don't know much about, is the parades they used to have through town with torches.
That was a, when I was a kid, they had them. And they used to kneel in front of the dormitory, I mean, in front of the gymnasium. That's when Cy Young was the alumni director. And they would all have pajamas on. And they'd already paid to go to the movie. So all they had to do was run in. So they would get the torches over here and light them and march down Washington Street up to Main, and up Main down to the theater. And they would, the city had put barrels of water there. As each boy went by the barrel, they put the torch in, put it, and then go on in the movie. And this friend of mine, when we were little, they used to pick us up and carry us in with them. When I was little.
Would they carry you in the parade?
They would carry us into the movie.
Uh-huh.
And so watch the movie, and then they all come back to the dormitory.
And did this happen very often?
It happened a few times. Of course, after I got bigger, I was young, and after I got bigger, my father went back to Lynchburg, and I didn't see it anymore.
And then, when you were a policeman, was it still going on then?
No. They didn't do it. They didn't have any parades then.
So, 1959, the students are all still wearing coats and ties all the time.
And beanies.
And freshman beanies. But during those first few years you were here, things started changing.
It started, in the 60s it started. They did away with the beanies, started wearing name tags. And then they did away with the name tags. And started dressing like you wanted to dress. Long hair. Of course, that was during the Vietnam War. And then one night we had the boogers got to acting up about running through the campus nude. They put something over the face so nobody to recognize them. This one boy, I knew he was an athlete. Come running out, he had something over his face, and I told him, you better get some clothes on before I turned him in. He said, how'd you, and the next day he said, how'd you know it was me? I said, I just knew it. But he had something over his face, so who in life where you couldn't tell who they were? And stuff like that. They were having a good time. And just like I said, as long as they listened to me, and did what I told them to do, it wasn't any problem.
Did you find your job changing through the years as the times changed, or was the behavior of the students pretty constant?
Well, they had their parties and did their drinking and carrying on. And then we got up to 1985 and went co-ed. And calm down a little bit. Now it's calmer now because we got more girls here.
Tell me what you mean by that. Tell me what influence
I
women
think,
have.
I think that the girls had something to do with it. That they calmed down. They wasn't running up and down the road three and four nights a week to Hollins and Sweetbriar. When they had girls here, they could date here. And so it calmed them down some. But they still have big times, I can tell you that.
And how would you define big time among the students?
Big parties and
and having the parties and carrying on and all that celebrating, especially during the Pledge Week when the kids tour. They do a lot of shows, you know. But it never bothered me because if I thought it was serious enough, I would step in and do something about it. But nowadays, I didn't even know it was any Rush Week this time at all. Because of course, I wasn't out there like I used to be.
Now, did you ever get involved in problems with hazing or anything like that?
Well, I used to see him express this one from time to time. He said he was putting stuff all over them, getting them pretty well drunked up. And he would come back to the dormitory and cause little problems, and I'd be there and do something with him.
Oh, come on, you gotta tell me more than that.
Oh, well, they didn't take long to calm them down. And stuff, and they always listened to me. They say, oh, come on, Murph. I said, listen. I said, if you don't want to go see the man, you better do what I tell you to do. They said, okay.
You're very persuasive.
I got along with them real well. And this past alumni weekend, I don't know how many hugs I got from the guy in the class of 67 and things like that, 62. And there's the Friday night at the Neon, this one boy. He's a local boy, but he's a lawyer in Lynchburg right now. Come through there with his hands full of food and stuff. He says, I can't shake your hand now, because my hand's full. He says, I'll just kiss you on the cheek. So he did.
That's so sweet. That's really sweet.
And there's one boy I was looking for the whole time during the class of 67. He was a football player. And he didn't come to any of the luncheons. So I asked one of the other football players, I says, where is he? He says he went to Goshen today. He and his wife and a couple of football players, old football players. And when I went down to the VMI game, he didn't see me, but I saw him when he came in and sat down. So I walked down a bit, standing by far near that wall behind him. He didn't know I was back there. I said, did you finally decide to come out of hiding? He said, Murph. I said, how'd you know me? He said, I know that voice. He came up and gave me a big hug. So, it's nice to have those kids come back and see them. Every time one of them sees me, he says, I haven't changed a bit. Because I said, I look the same as I was when they were here. But I know different.
Well, they know what they know too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that class of 67, 68, 69.
Buddy Atkins was 68.
Now, I presume, just like everywhere else in the world, drugs arrived at Washington and Lee.
Did what?
Drugs were here on campus.
Yeah, it was mainly marijuana, but they kept it quiet. They weren't open with it like people are nowadays. They would, for a long time there, on weekends, I was wondering why there wasn't too many parties going on around the fraternity house, and I think maybe they were off somewhere doing that, but where nobody could see them,
mm-hmm.
except the ones that were using.
And then, from what I understand, things changed a good bit in the 70s, too.
Yeah, some. They were a little calmer. And of course, I had wrote all these 18, I had 18 fraternity houses at the time. And I was around every one of them. And Dean Gillum told somebody one day, he wished he had 18 Bob Murrays where he could have one of these fraternity houses. But they always wonder where I come from and what I was doing. And I knew everything was going on. I just, all I did was just stand around and listen and figure out what was going on.
So you really got your information from them?
Yeah. They didn't know it, but I did. I've had them to tell me something happened and they would go off somewhere. Let me go, let it lay off about a week and come back. So I as well tell you because I know you'll find out and you'll tell me. I had some time and I know where you go. I used to go out at night. I'd go out every night in a week. After being over here all day, I'd come back out at night and stay there 3 or 4 hours. But people don't work like that anymore.
Why do you think you did it?
I enjoyed my work and I wanted to do a good job. And I think I did. I'm not bragging, but I think I did a fairly decent job. I used to catch a lot of people stealing the stuff. One time, one of our custodians had a son during Christmas, first Christmas I worked here. And he got in the dormitory and stole a bunch of stuff. And so I went to his father and I told him, I said, "Now, all the stuff comes back, I won't do anything. But if it doesn't, it doesn't, I am." So the next morning, I'm in the office and it's all laying on my desk. So that's what happened. They just brought it all back.
Did you ever get involved in honor system?
Oh, yeah.
Fishers?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. One time we were in the gym, we were having quite a bit of money taken doing PE classes. So I was in there dressing one day like I was dressing, making it like I was dressing to do something. And I noticed this young man come down through there. And then he walked by me and I just didn't pay any attention to him. So when he went out the door, I sneaked down and looked up the aisle and he was putting something in his pocket. And so I waved the glasses over and this boy told me somebody took his billfold. He had some $50 bills in it. Well, I had a pretty good idea what happened to it, so I waited to the boy that I saw take it, go to class, and then I went over and searched his room. And he took the money out of the billfold instead of doing away with it. He took it, put it in his suitcase under the bed, and I found it. So he no longer, he didn't want to notice very long. And I've had him forging checks. And I used to get samples of handwriting and send it off to a good friend of mine who used to be forensic man at FBI. And he would let me know if the same handwriting matched, and he did.
Do you think the honor system works very well?
I always believed in it. And I think it does a pretty good job. I always believed in it myself. And I've had numerous cases like that in the EC committee. One boy one time, I really wanted to teach him a lesson, and I think I did. He went over to Southern Seminary, no, Sweetbriar, and got in some trouble over there, and he gave him a false ID. And they gave me a license number. And so I checked on, and started running up for the EC. And they put him on probation. I didn't want him kicked out of school, but I wanted to teach him a lesson. And the day he graduated, he says, "You taught me a lesson." And he says, "I'll know not to lie again but my name."
I actually had one person tell me that you are the person he learned the most from in this school.
Yeah, I used to teach him, try to teach him right and wrong. But yeah, like I said, if they treated me right, I treated them right. And I wouldn't go overboard to try to get them in trouble. Yeah, talking about this honor system, I've had quite a few students in trouble, and they had to get rid of them. But I didn't get any kick out of it, because some of them I knew. I didn't want to do it, but I had to.
So would you actually go and testify?
Yes.
at EC?
Oh, yes.
Hearings? What was that like? I've never been to one. I've never had to do anything like that.
It's guys sitting in those black robes. It's quite intimidating to some of these kids that don't know what to get into. And I've been there numerous times. But like I told you, I didn't get any kick out of it. But it was something that was serious enough I had to do something about it.
Now, I'm surprised when you say that they gave somebody probation. I thought there was only one thing that...
No, I was trying to teach him a lesson.
Uh-huh.
I'd run him up before them just to let them get a go over him, and they did.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't lie anymore.
Uh-huh.
I told him, I said, "I'm not trying to get this kid kicked out of school, but I said, I want you guys to teach him a lesson." And they did.
Because I always had the impression that there was only one thing that the EC could do.
No, I guess it was on account of me that I told them I was just trying to teach them a lesson. And they agreed with me.
And did that happen more than once?
No, that was the only time I had to do it.
But with other students?
No.
He's lucky.
He is lucky. I kind of told him, I said, "I don't want to really do anything to him. I just want to teach him a lesson," and they did.
I'll bet he was scared.
He was. And I know I've had all kinds of things down there, but like I told you, I don't get any kick out of it.
So, how long did you work? When did you stop?
June 1991.
Okay, so you were still very much here when the women arrived.
1985. And that's when Dr. Wilson didn't like the word proctor. Because the word proctor in the dictionary says overseer of university practice, so forth. So he changed it to the director of security. And that's when I had all the men. At the time, we didn't have it, 5 or 6, and they wasn't wearing uniforms. And so I told them in a meeting, I says, I want to put these men in uniforms so the young ladies that are here at night won't be afraid to approach them if something's wrong. And so they said, okay, we'll do it. They did.
Good idea. So how did your job change once there were Washington and Lee?
Girls. Well, I just had to be a little more careful. I had to make sure that the people didn't ride them and heckle them. The first group of girls we had here, we had 114 in the group. And I think one of them got in some trouble. And they let her go. Of the 114, 109 of them graduated. And they were a little bit shook up because they were the first girls. And I made some awful good friends out of that group of girls because I looked after them the best I could. And then we enlarged the force after they came from about 6 people up to about, counting myself, was 12. So we could have somebody here 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And this school never did believe in having the men go to a police academy and carry weapons. They didn't want that.
So what kind of people would you hire?
Well, I hired the present boy that is assistant right now, and this boy, they call him Boehner, and he worked here at the school for years, and he had MP experience in the service. And then I hired a man that had been a police officer in California for 25 years. And then I hired this young black boy. He just got out of the Marine Corps. And then I decided to have some women. So we hired Ruth, the black lady. And they worked there pretty well. And so now I think he has two young ladies, two of them. Plus about 13 men. I tried to, at the time, the pay wasn't real good, you know. Of course, I think they're making better now. And I couldn't get them to raise the salary on them, so that's why we couldn't, you know, you get people real experienced, but they knew what to do. And we taught them.
So what would you teach them? How did you go about training them?
Just all the work they had to do, and to tell them that to be on the lookout for this and lookout for that, and told them what they could do and what they couldn't do. And all they did was more or less security. And we told them to, if any of the young ladies came by at night, wanted to ride somewhere, to take them, not let them walk. And we told the young ladies, especially if they parked up in the freshman parking lot, they wanted to ride back instead of walking, to come by the office and let somebody know, and they'd pick them up, bring them back. But now they have a phone up there, all they can do is call. At the time, we didn't have a phone, but they have one now. In fact, we got them all over campus where they can, in case of emergency, they can pick it up and call. It goes right straight to the security office. We had about 6 of them when I left. Of course, I think he has more now.
Can can you remember the preparations for having the girls arrive on campus?
Well, they had to do a lot of changing around in the gymnasium, which didn't take them too long. And they had to figure out how they were going to put the girls in the dormitories. So they decided to put the girls on the second and third floor and the boys on the first and fourth. So that's the way it's been working ever since.
Now, were there things that you had to do in particular to prepare for having them on campus?
No, just like I said, we put them in uniform and taught them what to expect and to be on alert at all times if anybody harassing them or bothering them, and they did.
And how did it change the relationship of the guys heading off to the women's schools? And
well, the first year, a few of the girls dated local students. But then, after we got more girls here, then more of them started dating girls here. And of course, some of the girls from other schools didn't think much of it, because the girls here was getting their dates and they couldn't get in. Couldn't get the dates themselves, so they didn't think much of it at all. And so finally, these girls, especially when they're getting ready to have fancy dress, these other girls, all these other schools coming in looking for dates. And our girls didn't think much of it either. So that's what happened. I think it's a whole lot better now. But they, like I told you, they still have their parties.
Well, you just mentioned fancy dress again. I'm glad you did, because I'll bet you've got some good fancy dress stories.
Oh, I don't know. For a while there, I just kind of stayed outside the building and trying to watch if it was bringing alcohol. And they didn't want it in there if they could help it. So then the dance board got the idea that too many of us getting in wasn't paying. So they would put me there at the door with Steve and Tommy and Fred Coffey, who works in the gym. He's security in the gym, and also sometimes he works on the campus. And all these alumni would come in there, start in the door on the other side, and they asked for a pass, and he said, well, we have already ordered them. And he sent them over to me, and I said, did you get them? They said, no. I said, you're going to have to pay them. And they all paid. Because I knew them. And they all, come on, Murph, we know you were one. I said, no, you didn't either. I said, I don't have your name on this list that you ordered the tickets. So let's get the money. So they did.
Need to turn the tape over.